listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with your host, Jay Taylor. If you have a question or comment about today's show, Jay would love to hear from you at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You can also send an email to questionsfortaylor@gmail.com. That's questions, the number 4, Taylor@gmail.com. Now, back to our program.
Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really happy to have Walter John Williams with me again. That's John Williams. He goes by the name John. John has been with us a number of times in the past. What is really remarkable about John is he comes from an Ivy League background. He's educated at Dartmouth. But unlike most people that come out of the Ivy League schools, he's remained very independent and not owned and operated by large corporate interests. And maybe, I don't know, maybe John has done extremely well financially in remaining independent, but a lot of times it doesn't work out that way. Whatever the case is, John is really, I really appreciate his work because of his independence, his willingness to think on his own and not accept the propaganda that's sent his way. In fact, he has really kicked back against a lot of the nonsensical numbers that he sees coming out of government. And for that, I'm very grateful because John helps those of us who don't have time to get into the weeds to understand this stuff, why maybe we shouldn't take the numbers we're given from government at face value. Thanks so much, John, for joining us again.
Jay, thank you so much for having me.
It's really good to have you, and it's shadowstats.com. Shadowstats.com is where you should go to sign up for John's very inexpensive newsletter. He provides an independent data, independent point of view based on data that you won't get anywhere else that I'm aware of. So, John, we titled the show today, Why Rising Inflation is Not Transitory. As I started to tell you before we had to go live here, Alistair MacLeod, who is a frequent guest on this show, has likened the current state of affairs that the U.S. is in now to John Law's Mississippi bubble, where the French bank had to create money out of thin air to buy shares of the Mississippi company to ensure that the shares wouldn't collapse, because if they had collapsed, there would be an implosion and a depression, the likes of which was unimaginably difficult. And Alistair says the same dynamic is now in play in the U.S., such that the Fed has now in the position of having to buy enormous amounts of treasuries to keep the interest rates from rising and to keep the equity market from falling. Although today, as we were just saying, the Dow is down over 500 points. I think it's, I'm looking at now 580 points down. So whatever they're doing seems not to be, there seems to be some downward pressure on the markets. Indeed, Michael Oliver told us at the beginning of today's show that he thinks we are topping out and getting ready for what he thinks will be a layered decline, but a very serious one over time. But anyway, do you think that analogy with the John Law's Mississippi bubble, the idea that in order to keep things from falling apart, the Fed has to go in, create money out of nothing, and then use that money to support the bond market? Otherwise, interest rates would go to the moon, and the equity market and everything would just implode. What are your thoughts?
I think in general terms, that's a pretty good analogy. The what you have here is a circumstance where the Fed is really creating unfettered money supply creation, mm-hmm. And they've been playing terrible games with the reporting on the money supply. I follow it closely, and the reason my numbers are a little different is that I have no tie directly to Wall Street. I have a lot of people on Wall Street who are clients, but I don't put out a bias for Wall Street, which you get with a lot of analysts, because that's the type of stuff that sells. Mm-hmm. I try to give people an honest viewpoint. I look at going back to the you look at the inflation numbers back in the 1980s, early 80s. The government started to redefine inflation because they didn't like the way it was going. That actually goes back to Nixon going off the gold standard, 70-71. Up until that point in time, you'll find that inflation stayed reasonably stable versus the price of gold.
Yep.
And after Nixon abandoned gold, all of a sudden you started to see a pickup in inflation, and gold prices were rising as well. Mm-hmm. Gold and inflation tend to run together. By the early 80s, the government was seeing too much inflation, and rather than do anything about it from a significant standpoint, what they did was they redefined inflation. They changed the way they defined the first big change they made was the way they defined housing cost, big component, mm-hmm. Important component of the consumer price index. And up yep. until that point in time, it had included as a component of the housing cost the cost of buying a new house, which is not unreasonable to have that in there because some people are buying new homes as the process goes along here. What they did instead was they replaced it with what they called homeowner's equivalent rent. And the concept there was the government would estimate what the average homeowner would charge himself to rent his own house from himself.
Yeah.
And then estimate how much he'd raise the rent each month against himself. And that was the inflation cost that went into the housing element. Completely bogus number, no relationship to any reality. And as these the changes went along, and there are different changes to methodology over the years, it's aggregated to about 7 percentage points. So that right now, I guess tomorrow, we're going to get the headline inflation for April. Now, we're already beginning to see, and I'll get into why we're beginning to see, but we're already beginning to see a significant pickup in inflation here. Tomorrow, I think the expectations month-to-month are for about 0.2%. I think it'll be fairly well above that, maybe 0.5%. But whether or not that happens, if you get a 0.2% increase, that will put up the put the CPI up about 3.6-3.7% year to year, which will be a 10-year high for the year to year change in the CPI.
Those are the government numbers now, John.
Of course, part of the problem there, and you have to balance these things out, is that a year ago you were in the midst of a an oil price war, and that depressed the CPI a year ago. So, so part of the jump you're going to see there in the year-to-year basis is because the year-to-year was depressed last year by this oil price war. That's now behind us. The energy prices, the oil prices have all recovered from that, and that is... or at least the energy prices in the CPI have, so that it will, you're not going to see that continuing much longer. Mm-hmm. But you have a circumstance there that, let's say, indeed you're up 3% year to year, with the changes that have been made over time in restating the headline inflation, the common experience would probably be up... about 10 percentage points year over year. I find a lot of people think that's fairly realistic. But I'm at a point now where, you know, I've been looking at the Fed and saying, hey, watch out, we're heading into hyperinflation because the Fed's just creating money beyond anyone's expectations. The federal government is spending money, deficit spending that's just exploding. You're looking at deficits now that are unprecedented, with our total debt exceeding the GDP for the first time in history and expanding rapidly. All those things are suggestive of a hyperinflation, and that's still my fear here. And I think that's what's beginning to unfold, because as I talk to people, and I have clients in all sorts of industries all over the place. One I have is in the chemical industry. And he was kind enough to send me a note. He said, just for your information, here's a list of the products we sell. And he listed all these different chemicals. Some of them were petroleum-based, And we have petroleum up so much year to year, you'd expect a large surge there. A lot of them weren't. Also a large surge there as well. You know, he was looking at increases from 30 to 90% year over year. His comment was, well, I'm having no trouble passing these cost increases along to my my customers. It's going to be going up in the CPI. I've gotten, and today got some similar comments from people in the construction industry. Terrible inflation, but guess what? It's no problem. We can pass the cost along.
There's plenty of money floating around. The Fed will just pump it into the system, and the prices can keep rising, I guess, until something breaks. So, John, let me just understand. What you're suggesting is that the Fed, you're expecting the report to come out around 3.7%, something like that, and that you're, if I understand
the consensus would be for the next month, the equivalent on the year-to-year, there's about 3.6, 3.7.
Right. But your number would be what, John?
My number would be roughly 7 percentage points on top of that. So it would be over.
On top of that. That's, I understood. Yeah, I just wanted to make sure that was clear to our listeners.
Oh, you got that correct. And yeah. That's generally not considered anything close to hyperinflation, but we've been seeing this, and guess what? The price of gold has moved along with it. That the price of gold is reflecting a similar inflation rate. But where I'm concerned about the hyperinflation, and you've got all sorts of people with monetary theories, and I'm a monetarist at heart, but you have to consider here that the, a common criticism I get is that, you're going to see rising inflation. That means the velocity of money has to be accelerating. Mm-hmm. And what that means is the speed, you have the money supply, you have the GDP, you divide the money supply into the GDP, and that's the rate at which the money supply is turning over in the GDP, and that begins to accelerate. That suggests that you're going to see an inflation. You can have that because that's if the money supply turns over in a healthy manner in the economy, that suggests that it's a relatively healthy economy. You'll have economic growth, and economic growth usually provides some inflation. But what we have here is a collapsed economy, and this is not because of the normal business cycle. It is because the government shut down the economy with a pandemic. Mm-hmm. Now, and here you have the Fed creating all this money. What you're seeing is very low velocity of money, but that's where when you get a hyperinflation. If you go back to the Weimar Republic, you look at other hyperinflation circumstances, those are not robust, booming economies. They're basically economies that have been collapsed for other reasons, and money's being pumped into the system to keep the system afloat, and the low velocity there is what helps to trigger the hyperinflation, not regular inflation. Regular inflation you get with the more standard models, but we're in an extraordinary circumstance that can give you a hyperinflation. Mm-hmm. And what I'm willing to wager here as we talk is that let's say we see 4% year-to-year inflation tomorrow, which would be a little bit above consensus. It could be 5%. Mm-hmm. Got some adjustment there with oil prices going back and forth. But from all that I'm hearing, you're going to see that picking up in the next several months. And if you see that up 5, 6%, 7, 8%, that is a very bad sign in terms of where this is going. I think we could be into a hyperinflation early in 2022, and when it hits quickly. You don't have too much warning with it. I've talked with people who lived through the Weimar Republic many years ago and subsequently with their children and such, and it hit very rapidly.
Yeah.
And overnight, the shelves were empty.
Yeah.
Before
well,
we
yeah.
get to that point, and I'm sure a circumstance here likely would develop differently, but as an example, you could go out to dinner and have a wonderful bottle of wine, and you might find that you had to negotiate the price of your dinner before you sat down because it had cost more after you finished. Mm-hmm. And that fancy bottle of wine, whatever it cost, the next morning would be worth more as scrap glass than it was as a fine bottle of wine. But that was still at a level where the economy was functioning. Mm-hmm. And that's before it just went hyperbolic and things.
Oh, and everything fell apart, essentially. Well, John, do you see some increase in velocity actually starting to occur now?
No.
Are you?
Well,
you don't see.
If you'll pardon the language, the economic numbers we're seeing are nonsense. At least the aggregate ones, the GDP.
Yeah.
If you look at the payroll numbers. The payroll numbers are closer to reality. The problem with the GDP and the way that gets reported, and again, this is, I used to be just a simple economist. I projected where things were going with the economy. So then I sold my services accordingly, and I had econometric models that had lead times where you could plug in actual numbers. That was that's where I started, and I made a good business with that. But then the government began monkeying with its numbers, changing its CPI, changing the way it were calculated the GDP, which made my models they're worthless in terms of forecasting what was really happening. So what I early on concentrated on was getting beyond all the nonsense that they were putting into the headline numbers and giving an estimate of where the headline numbers were, so that you had a what I found that the not only did they understate the inflation, but of course with the GDP, they redefined the inflation in the GDP.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing about using low inflation is that headline economic numbers, be it the real GDP or if you look at real retail sales, that's the nominal number divided by the inflation rate. And if you have too low of an inflation rate, that boosts the headline growth, real growth.
Sure.
So what we're seeing a GDP that is inflated beyond reality here, and it's the best I can see as headlined.
Mm-hmm.
And we just got the first quarter GDP number. We're still shy of 3.5% annualized quarterly growth of taking that to a recovery level. Recovery here is defined as reclaiming the pre-pandemic peak or the pre-recession peak.
Uh-huh.
I think we're about 5% further below that. We're a ways off from recovering in reality. And actually, given the employment numbers, you may very well see a stalled second quarter GDP, even a contraction in the third and fourth quarter. This is not normal economy. We did not have a normal economic slowdown. We don't have a normally functioning economy, and you're not going to have a normal recovery. You have a circumstance here where there's been terrible damage done to the average individual, the average industry. You can have all sorts of hype and a lot of the numbers they put forth in the GDP, which I think is still at this point largely guessed at. They don't have really good hard numbers. Yeah, they're not getting quality reporting.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, where you do have good quality reporting, the numbers look bad, such as with the trade deficit hitting record levels, and that's a big negative to GDP.
Right.
It's not as advertised, and I think you'll see that headline numbers will be slowing down. It's not a happy circumstance for the administration. It's not a happy circumstance for the Fed, because they don't like to be pumping money into something like this, but that's what they're doing. They have to.
If inflation numbers are picking up, interest rates are going to rise. Doesn't the Fed have to start printing more and more money to keep the interest rates subdued?
Well, normally there is that's what happens with interest rates. They build themselves on top of the inflation. But if they don't necessarily report the inflation, and the Fed keeps the they try to understate it, and they are understating it consistent historically over time. I don't see that the Fed is necessarily going to start raising rates. Mm-hmm. I think both the Fed and the federal government are going to continue whatever they have to do to try and stimulate whatever mm-hmm. economic activity they can. They can't afford to let the economy collapse, which it effectively has in many areas. It's not as quite as advertised. Mm-hmm. And what I'm looking for is a very simply a hyperinflationary economic crash. We're beginning to see the rising inflation. We're beginning to see the faltering recovery from this terrible pandemic circumstance. It's not the report of it's not the fault of government policies per se that got us into it, but they're going to do everything they can to keep it collapsing further, where it does more damage to the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. And I think John, we only have a couple of minutes left, so I really want to get to the question that we're trying to answer today. I think you've greatly answered, partly answered at least, and that is, I know that you believe that inflation is not transitory. But tell us why you could what could cause you to be wrong about that? What could cause your hyperinflationary theory to be wrong, or that the Fed could be right and this is that it is only transitory? Can you see any possible way that could be the case?
The inflation is largely monetary, and if the Fed can find that it can cut back on its monetary expansion, I mean, well, right now what they did was they change the reporting of M1 so that you wouldn't see that it was growing 70-80%
year.
I've just redefined M1 to its old 80% of what it used to be, which is just cash and deposits. That was the original M1. That's still growing 60-80%.
Wow.
What they defined it to is M2 is down around 20-30%. As long as they're stimulating the economy as they are. And what if you look at the monetary base, and we've got that for April, although they haven't published the monthly average, you're seeing a surge there in both the currency in circulation and the reserves with the Federal Reserve banks. That surge in the reserves is an indication that there's problems in the banking system. Mm-hmm. And the banking system problems are growing, and as long as that's happening, they're not going to pull back here. They'll do whatever they have to do to keep the banking system afloat, and I think that's going to require continual infusion of funds into the system.
Right. So they can't afford. They cannot afford to cut it off. Right, John?
Sorry.
They cannot afford to cut off the monetary system. They can't afford to stop the money flowing faster and faster.
No, they can't.
Okay, that's the bottom line then.
They know the inflation risk, but they view the risk of absolute financial collapse as greater.
Okay, John, we're going to have to leave it go at that because we're out of time already. I think that you've answered our question. There's no choice but to keep printing money more and more faster and faster. And I know they can't allow the interest rates to spike up. It's going to be lethal, I think, from almost every direction. That's my read of it, and I think that your work really supports that theory, and I can understand the hyperinflationary thesis. I don't like it, but it is what it is, John. Thank you so much for helping us today understand what we're facing here. It's greatly appreciated. Folks, that is
Thank you, Jay. Always a pleasure to talk with you.
Thank you, John. Well, that's all the time we have this week, folks. Next week, Kevin Duffy of the Coffee Can Portfolio will be my guest, along with Carl Lefberg. He is the Firefox Gold Corp's president. So we'll be right back. We'll be with you next week with those two guests. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.
Thank you again for listening to Turning Hard Times into Good Times with Jay Taylor. Please join us again next Tuesday at noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel.